The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had been looking at a quote which was given by an evolutionist who was rightly judging the difficulties in at least one of the common notions about where arthropods came from and what they did once they got here. We've established long since that the arthropods are the most numerous of the organisms that we see in the world. There are more species of arthropods than anything else. And these are a varied group, as we've noted. The quote was talking about the Onocophora, the Peripatus, the little creature that's supposed to be the common ancestor between worms and insects, trilobites, fossil group. There are no live trilobites as far as we know. Crustaceans, the myriapods, these are millipedes and centipedes, arachnids and insects. And let me go back and read the quote, and in particular the last sentence in the paragraph is one that I was taking issue with on two points. This is by Colin Tudge in an article that appeared in the New Scientist back in 1973, and the article was entitled "Throw Away Your Zoology Textbooks." Quote, "Once there were the arthropoda, an extraordinary successful phylum of joint-footed invertebrates. For example, Onocophora, trilobites, crustaceans, myriapods, arachnids, insects. They were varied, these creatures. Indeed, there were more species of arthropods than of all the other kinds of animal put together." Now, this is the sentence. "They were nature's most supreme demonstration of adaptive radiation about a common theme." And I was taking issue with the idea that this, quote, nature, end quote, is capable of producing anything. This is an immaterial, amorphous mental construct, that there is some entity inherent in nature which is guiding all of the things that occur. Now, I hope for most of you I do not need to point out that this is absolutely unbiblical to start with. And perhaps more to the point here, there is certainly no evidence from science that any such thing occurs. It is simply something that is used by the evolutionist when they have gotten themselves to the point that they reject an intelligent God as creator, but recognize that matter and motion, matter in motion, cannot produce any kind of complicated, purposeful structure, organisms, for example, no teleology. And yet we look around nature and that's all we see. We see purposiveness there. So if you have rejected God as the originator of this purpose, how do you deal with this dilemma? Well, you deal with it by dreaming up this entity, nature, that somehow supplies all that God would have done if he had existed. Now, I made the comment last time that there are a variety of such mental constructs. They may be a cosmic mind. They may be Mother Nature. They may be natural selection. There'll be all sorts of things that are somehow supposed to supply this. And I was simply taking issue with the idea that this mythical nature has the capability of doing anything. But we also were discussing the problem of the last phrase in the sentence, the adaptive radiation or adaptation. And I was simply making the observation that although adaptation is usually used as the primary basis of change in organisms, that the phenomena that are responsible for causing adaptation are phenomena that can affect only somatic tissue, not reproductive tissue, muscles, bone, etc., exoskeleton in the case of insects or whatever. But these phenomena do not have the capability of bringing about changes in genetic material. And as we have established long since, if you're going to have a change in structure somehow, that change must occur in the genetic material before the change occurs, or it must be inherent in the genetic material before the change occurs. And on other programs, we've talked about such things as changes in bird feather color, or the snowshoe rabbits, or the Chinese primula, a very brilliant scarlet flower that, if raised in the greenhouse, produces the scarlet color. If you put it outside, it turns white. So yes, there are genetic capabilities in an organism which, when placed in a different environment, will show up differently from the conditions prior to that time. But those kinds of changes have to be present already in the genetic material. There is nothing in the environment that is going to be capable of altering the genetic material, creating a new sequence of nucleotides in the genes that is going to be able to produce this new characteristic, regardless of what it is. Now, the reason I'm taking such issue with this is simply that it is something that appears in every biology text currently in print, and yet it is contrary to anything that we can observe in science, and it is contrary to the scripture. Now, we can observe the changes. I'm not fussing over that. But there is not anything that can be scientifically tested that would be accountable for the changes, other than the fact that the genetic propensity for those changes was already in existence. And yet, this is just the sort of comment that's sort of passed off as so obvious, there's no need to demonstrate it. Well, fact is, you can't demonstrate it. And I would argue it is not at all obvious. It is simply the attempt by those who have rejected the idea of a creator to provide some kind of entity that will do what the creator would have done if he existed. And I find in my students particularly, they really have never given much thought to the difficulties of this. And just sort of accept, because they see it in the textbook regularly, they assume that must be the way it is. Now let me go on. That was the first paragraph of the quote. Let me go on to the second one, which is what we started looking at initially. Quote, "All of which zoological folklore is a load of rubbish. One of the fundamental weaknesses of the traditional view of arthropod phylogeny," phylogeny simply means evolution, "one of the fundamental weaknesses of the traditional view of arthropod phylogeny, that all forms arose from the polychaetes via a common stock." Now let me untangle that for a minute. These polychaetes are members of the phylum Annelida. They are, for the most part, marine annelids, very interesting-looking structures. If you've had a course in invertebrate zoo, you may have had to dissect one of these. But that was the source. The polychaetes are not arthropods, so there had to be something in between. That is what the common stock is talking about. "One of the fundamental weaknesses of the traditional view of arthropod phylogeny, that all forms of arthropods, arose from the polychaetes via a common stock. The weakness of the traditional view of arthropod phylogeny is that it presupposed the existence of intermediate ancestral types. And that we have talked about. These are the missing links, the intermediate species, common ancestors that we have dealt with previously. And the obvious question is, where are they? Okay, fine. So you've decided all of the arthropods have to come from polychaetes. Where are these organisms? And they simply do not exist. Again, they are mental constructs, products of the imagination. They have not been found, nor, in my opinion, will they be found. And this is a fundamental weakness of the traditional view of evolution. Let me read the last sentence here. Let me go back and read this last paragraph, including the last sentence. "All of which zoological folklore is a load of rubbish. One of the fundamental weaknesses of the traditional view of arthropod phylogeny, that all forms arose from the polychaetes via a common stock, is that it presupposed the existence of intermediate ancestral types, but there is no fossil evidence for such types, and there are no modern animals resembling those hypothetical types." So here is an evolutionist admitting something rather obvious, I think, if for any person who is knowledgeable in the area of biology, you have the supposed origin, the polychaetes. We have the arthropods in all of their variety, but we do not have that common stock. In fact, it would be difficult to try and visualize what that common stock was. Once you understand the variety of arthropods, insects, arachnids, millipedes, centipedes, lobsters, crayfish, shrimp, trilobites, what in the world would a common ancestor to that group of organisms look like? Restrict that simply to the insects for a moment. We've talked about some of the simple insects like the silverfish, but you go through the insects in your own mind, those that we have just been talking about, the Orthoptera, cockroaches, grasshoppers, praying mantises, walking sticks, and then you think about the rest of them, the cicadas, the Homoptera, the stink bugs, the Hemipterans, the beetles in all of their variety, Hymenoptera, the bees, wasps, the Lepidoptera, etc. You can pick any one of those orders and you would have trouble in coming up with a common ancestor just for the order. It would be impossible even to dream up a common ancestor for the insects by virtue of all of their variety. But here, you have the necessity of coming up with a common ancestor for all of the arthropods. Now, the fact is, there have been none of these ancestors found. Now, if a person wants to take the position, the philosophical position, that this is where they came from, that's fine, but it is not science. We have no scientific evidence for this kind of thing. And if you're going to put any reliance on science itself, then when you veer away from science into an area of philosophy and religion, you need to be sure that you admit that. And this author is pointing out a very real and a very important lack of evidence to support what traditional evolution talks about. And I emphasize this here simply to help some of you understand the kind of argument that the evolutionists make and why it is that there are many of us who disagree with that, both from the standpoint of science and from the standpoint of Scripture. There is simply no evidence that supports that kind of a view for the evolutionist.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.